You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning. Welcome into First Take. Thank you so much for being with us. And we have a whole lot to unpack today. Stephen A. Smith, Keyshawn Johnson, Molly Karam Rose, blockbuster moves in college football. We'll hear from Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick on the departure of Brian Kelly and the future of the program in just a moment. Let's get into those moves first. Brian Kelly, the winningest coach in Notre Dame history, leaving the program to become the next head football coach at LSU. The Tigers are just 2 years removed from a national title. LSU announced the deal this morning. Kelly has changed his Twitter biography and is now identifying himself as LSU's head coach. LSU announced Kelly has agreed to a 10-year deal, gentlemen, $95 million plus incentives. On the West Coast, Keyshawn, Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma after 5 years at OU, set to join the SEC and is headed to Southern California to become the new head coach of your alma mater, the USC Trojans. Riley had a 55-10 record during his tenure. Here's Lincoln Riley at the introductory press conference.
To all the Trojan family, we're in this together. It's gonna take every single one of us to do what we have to do. We all have different roles in that, and I think it's important for us at this time to all pull together. And I can promise you that you're going to get the best out of myself. You're going to get the best out of our staff, out of our players. And we're going to put something on that field that you're proud of. And I agree with Chairman Caruso. This place is going to be full. This is going to be the mecca of college football.
Okay, Keyshawn, I'll start with you. More surprising news. Is it Lincoln Riley or Brian Kelly in their new digs?
Well, I would probably say it's Brian Kelly. If you could tell, I'm a little darker because I've been out west in that great sunshine. So I got a little tan. But I would
say. But you back now. In a little cold weather.
But I would say it's Brian Kelly right. Because when you look at it, I didn't expect for him to go to LSU.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
If he was going to make any leap, you make the leap to the National Football League from Notre Dame. Because Notre Dame is a prestigious program.
Mm-hmm.
That is something you can sell. I know everybody thinks, well, every team is on national television anyway. But every team ain't Notre Dame on NBC. Every home game, mm-hmm. no matter who you play.
Mm-hmm.
You can be on national television, but you got to go and be on the SEC network or the ACC network, not NBC. That's one selling point. On top of that, they can pay the money that LSU has given him because it's Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
It's mind-boggling the fact that you've been there two times in the Final Four, once in the BCS championship. So you have shown that you have the ability to do that. You're going to LSU up against the big dogs now. It's different. This isn't where you can cherry pick the top player academically as a student athlete from a particular region. You're now in a bowl where everybody's coming to pick from.
Of course. And that's part of the reason Lincoln Riley wanted to leave, because they were going to the SEC.
And so for me, I'm like, I would sit tight at Notre Dame, get my little $9 million, my $8.5 million, and be good and have a better shot at going and playing one of those teams, because you got to run through the granddaddy of them all, and Nick Saban.
Mm-hmm.
You got to now see him. You know, Ole Miss is going to give you a fight with Lane Kiffin. Tennessee is going to get better with Josh Heupel. Jimbo Fisher is a hell of a coach. Eventually, that's going to turn around at A&M. Texas is going to figure it out. You know, so it's kind of, it's a little weird and odd to me. I thought the jump would have been the NFL and not to LSU.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was more surprised by Lincoln Riley, and I'm not dismissing anything that you're saying, although I will say this. Notre Dame, even though Brian Kelly was 113-40 over his years there, that's a 74% winning percentage, essentially. The bottom line is Notre Dame ain't really, even though they've been in the playoffs, we knew they weren't going to win a national championship. We thought about Alabama. We thought about LSU. We thought about Georgia. We thought about Ohio State. We really looked at Notre Dame, and we said your championship is the fact that you got to the college football playoffs, but we didn't anticipate that you were going to be those monsters.
But that's based on what we've seen in the past.
No, I'm just talking about that's based on what we've seen in recent memory from the other teams. Notre Dame is as prestigious as it is it what it used to be in my estimation? So I wasn't caught as much by surprise. I'm not trying to say they were not prestigious. They're on national television.
No, I get what you're,
I get what you're saying.
Let me jump in here. Excuse me, really quickly. Let's send it out to Notre Dame right now. Athletic director Jack Swarbrick on the departure of Brian Kelly.
I was involved in a search for a new coach at the University of Notre Dame to lead its football program. And 12 years later, I find myself in that role again. The circumstances could not be more different. Then I was in the process of trying to find someone to fix a very broken program. And in a circumstance where, frankly, a lot of people didn't think this was a place they wanted to be because they didn't think Notre Dame was committed or able to produce championship football teams. I couldn't be more pleased with the difference I see today as I embark on another search. In my 14 years, this program has never been in better shape. We have never been in a better position to take the next step in building this program into a consistent contender for national championships. And I am excited with the opportunity to attract the next leader to do that. We are in that position in significant part thanks to Coach Kelly, who did a marvelous job of helping to restore the program at the University of Notre Dame. I am thankful to him and Pocky for all they contributed to this university and to the football program, and will be ever indebted for the contributions that they made. Similarly, we are in that position because of a great coaching staff and administrative staff. I think we have arguably the best staff in college football, and it's a testament to why we're in the position we're in today. But most importantly, I am in an envious position as I go out now and search for the next leader because of our student athletes. We have 118 of the best young men in America who are at the core of our program. I met with them this morning and I was reminded of that. And reminded of the fact that the culture built in this program isn't Jack Swarbrick's culture. It's not Brian Kelly's culture. It is the culture built by those young men, and especially the leaders of that team. So I am most indebted to them for what they built, and they have my commitment that I will ensure that nothing that they built will be diminished or lost as we move this program forward in the weeks, months, and years ahead. So with that, I'm happy to take questions.
We'll start with Eric Hansen in the front.
I'm told I have to say my name and where I work. So Eric Hansen, South Bend Tribune.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Who is going to be your interim coach as you go through the search, and any chance that person could end up being the permanent head coach?
Yeah, we haven't made a decision on an interim yet. And frankly, I think we may approach it a little bit differently. This staff is so well structured and the responsibilities are so well understood. I feel less of a need to have a designated interim. But if as the search progresses, if we feel a need to put somebody in that position, they would not be a candidate for the job.
You know, you mentioned that you felt like Notre Dame was in a really good place. What do you need to do? What are the next steps you need to do in terms of timetable, in terms of recruits, to make sure there's not kind of a half step back here as you're looking for new leadership?
The first and foremost is getting the right leader. And so, I recognize the external factors, if you will, you know, the recruiting calendar and transfer portals. But none of that is a reason not to make sure that we run a process that gets the very best person to lead this program forward. So that'll be our focus.
Last one from me. You mentioned the players. And players have a voice in a lot of things now. Will you invite their voice in the selection process?
Not with regard to specific candidates, but absolutely with regard to characteristics and criteria. Every search I've conducted here in every sport, I've had a group of student athletes help advise me. And I'll look to the captains of this football team to play that role.
John Bryce is next, also on the front.
Hey, Jack. Hi. Thanks for your time. John Bryce, Football Scoop. It seems like Brian had at least one or more conversations with USC and then very obviously had one or more conversations to get to this point with LSU. Did he discuss those conversations with you? Did you get the sense there was something he was looking for that either he didn't believe he could find at Notre Dame or that Notre Dame could not deliver to him?
Yes, he did not discuss with me the conversations he had with other universities. We always are talking about the program's needs and how to improve it, and there was not anything identified at any time that was something we could not accommodate or meet. We just simply didn't have those things come up.
Did he give you any opportunity to try to convince him to stay or to match LSU's offer? And then last one for me would be, what are some of the defining characteristics that you will look for as you go through this process, and will you use a search firm?
Yeah. If we will conduct the search, the University of Notre Dame, and I will lead that search. If we use any outside resources, it'll be for administrative purposes, background checks, maybe, you know, booking my travel under a different name, all the things that that try and mislead you guys a little bit, keep you off my tail. But no, we will take the lead on the search. No, Brian did not come to me, which frankly I appreciated, with some opportunity to match the offer. When we talked, he indicated that he was resigning to take another position. He thanked me for the opportunity the university had provided to him, thanked me for our friendship, which I very much appreciated, and I wished him all the best. And we talked a little bit about how today would work.
Pete Byrne is next, middle row to your right.
Jack, to your right, in second row. Pete Byrne, WSBT. When did you have that conversation with Brian Kelly? And to what extent were you surprised that that's what he wanted to talk to you about?
It was sometime last night, and I can't give you the exact time. I was not surprised. There had been enough in the weeks leading up that gave me a pretty strong sense that there might be other things that were attracting Brian. And then, of course, social media got very active during the day yesterday. So between the two things, I was not surprised.
You've discussed with us in the past that for not just this position, but all of your head coaching positions, that you kind of always keep an ongoing running list of what direction you might consider turning in the event you needed to make a replacement. And I don't anticipate you're willing to share that list with us today. But as you look at who would be on your list, how would you characterize those people? Are you looking for someone with head coaching experience? Are you looking strictly in the college ranks? I'm just curious how you weigh those factors.
Yeah. First of all, I think I'm the only AD in the country, but I don't keep a list of people. Because my experience has been every search has its own dynamic and its own characteristics. So last time we did a football search, we built a list of characteristics, I can't remember now, I think it was 11 or 12, that we built first. And then we screened candidates against that list. And high on that list was rebuilding a program. Well, rebuilding a program doesn't even show up on the list this year, right? And so a different focus takes you in different directions, and that's where I'm pleased to say we are today. And I forgot to address the characteristic question that was asked earlier, so I'm glad you brought it back up. Fit at Notre Dame is number one. This is a unique place, and it is important that you understand and appreciate the uniquenesses. And so that's a critical element of this. increasingly the role of college football head coaches is a CEO role. And so clearly understanding your approach to building and managing staff becomes very important. Next, what's your approach to playing the game? What's your style? What do you do? How do you achieve victory on the football field? And then a whole list of things that relate to attracting and developing great student athletes, and especially the development part of it. I'm really pleased with where our recruiting is today and the improvements we've made in it, the resources we put into it. But I still want to be a great development program. And so what are your ideas on developing young men to be great players, great champions, and great parts of our community?
As it relates to your head coach being CEO-like, will you entertain someone that's not been a head coach before?
I don't want to answer it as a hypothetical, right? I mean, we're going to take those characteristics and, you know, we're going to find the best person. And I don't want to set any individual criteria as part of that.
And lastly, have you guys reached out to anyone yet just to begin gauging interest?
No.
Okay.
Although I've had a lot of outreach, and we'll spend today starting to reply to that outreach.
Tim Priester is next in the back.
Tim Priester, Irish Illustrated. Jack, most of what I was going to ask has been asked, but just is there a timetable that you're working under as you move forward with this?
No, every search process has its own rhythm, and you want to do the best job you can, not the fastest job you can. We're going to do the best job we can to find the right person to lead Notre Dame.
And then in terms of communication with assistant coaches, do you meet with all of them? How will that process go?
Well, the first decision I made last night was to just keep them on the road because Notre Dame's in a great place, and I don't want anybody to think we're not moving forward full steam. And so our coaches have remained out on the road. Because of that, I can't convene them as a group. So we've communicated via email, and I've had calls with several of them. I haven't gotten to all of them yet.
Have you been made aware of any assistant coaches that will definitely be going with Brian Kelly to LSU?
No.
All right, we're going to shift to Zoom next. Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated, you're up first.
Hey, Jack. What happens if you make the playoff? Do you allow Brian Kelly to coach, or who coaches for you?
No, we will have our current coaching staff, I hope, largely intact, and we'll designate the person who has to make the jump ball calls, like how to use timeouts and the coin flip. But we've got a great staff. We got great coordinators, and so I have every confidence that we will be fully prepared for what I hope is a CFP game. But if not, I'm certain it'll be a great New Year's Six game, and Brian will not be part of that for us.
Jack, and one last thing. What does it say maybe about the landscape of college football right now, and that we've had, you know, in about a 36-hour span, two of the most significant high-profile coaching moves, you know, for $100+ million in contract over the last couple of days. Like, what does it say about where college football is right now?
Oh, I probably need more time to process that. I mean, obviously, it has. You've seen a significant shift, right? You've seen a shift in mobility and a shift in compensation. I think your question's the right one. I don't have the answer, but I think we better be asking it. We better be asking what we want college football to be and how we make sure it still fits inside a university environment.
Up next is Patrick Engel from Blue and Gold.
Jack, kind of going off of that, when you look at the timing of this with a departure from a major program that's still in the mix for a CFP berth, I guess, kind of how do you process that, and how surprised are you that it happened when it did with you guys still in the mix?
Oh, you know, it's the timing is always going to be this, right? I mean, two things have happened. One is schools have accelerated their decisions to relieve coaches, and you saw that this year. But coaches are going to make the decisions this time of year because if you get further, you're probably not – don't have attractive options available to you. So nothing surprises me about the timing or that it occurs in a year where we have had an exceptional year and are well-positioned for postseason. You know, that's a little bit of the dynamic now. And look, 12 years is a really long time at Notre Dame. And we were incredibly well-served to have Brian here for that period of time. But it's a long time. And I have contemplated for some period of time that there had to be an endpoint coming. We hadn't talked specifically about when that was, but so in both the long-term perspective and the near-term, this wasn't a surprise, and I think this place is perfectly prepared to move forward.
Pete Sampson is next from The Athletic. Go ahead, Pete.
Okay, that was Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick on the departure of Brian Kelly, who's going to LSU. A lot to unpack there. Some quick notes that I took, guys. He says the program has never been in a better position, crediting Brian Kelly for that. Confidence in his coaching staff. I found it interesting. He doesn't see a need to designate an interim coach. He said potentially just using someone in his coaching staff. Obviously, we know Brian Kelly signed a large deal. It was 10-year, $95 million. He did not give Notre Dame the opportunity to match. Keyshawn, any initial reactions to what he said? And then I want to get some potential candidates from you, because he said there was a lot of outreach from coaches and he will use today to respond. He made sure to make note of that.
I mean, it's one of the most coveted jobs in all of sports in general.
Course.
So, of course, the agents are going to be calling and emailing and texting and doing whatever they can to get to him. What stood out for me, and I knew he would say this, is he saw it coming. Mm-hmm. He wasn't blindsided by the fact that Brian Kelly decided to take his show to LSU. I mean, you could see it coming. It was something, as he said, 12 years is a long time to be in one institution and not win a national title, although you've been there, but you haven't won. It's a long time. In terms of names, Luke Fickell obviously jumps out, Midwest guy, kind of knows the geographic region in terms of recruiting. Another guy who's at Alabama, who was at the Houston Texans, and Bill O'Brien. He was at Penn State, did a good job at kind of, you know, calming the waters there when everything was going down. And then Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern. If he can do what he has been doing at Northwestern for so many years, despite the academic challenges, he knows that Notre Dame has academic challenges of getting kids in. Now, kids that specifically go to Northwestern, it's like, okay, we're going to go to Northwestern, but I know for sure academically my life is going to go into another direction if it doesn't make it in football. You got those same challenges at Notre Dame. It's hard to get people in. But you can get better athletes in Notre Dame with high academic achievements, much like Stanford. So those are kind of the three names that kind of stick out to me right there.
Only name that resonates with me is the guy you picked from Northwestern. That's it. That's it. Nobody else. I mean, the way I look at it, what he's been doing, Northwestern is right outside Chicago. I'm looking at it from the standpoint that you're right in that area and you've had some success there. And obviously Notre Dame is an upgrade from Northwestern. That, it seems to me, to be an ideal candidate for that job. Outside of that, what about your man Marcus Freeman, who's a defensive coordinator for you right there?
But he already said he ain't. As soon as he said it, Stephen A, my face.
Exactly.
My face felt like I was 80 years old. Right. It dropped. As soon as he said, that guy who's the interim is not going to be a candidate. Well, I'm like, well, he's out anyway.
Well, I'm just saying. I'm just looking at it from that standpoint. If you're Swarbrick, why would you just discount somebody that's on Brian Kelly's staff, that's been producing for him, that's been a part of the team's success for the last several years? I would say that that would be the way to go, either him or the guy from Northwestern.
You can always go Coach Shaw at Stanford because he understands. Remember, you got to understand the landscape of what it's about.
True.
Academically, although Tyrone Willingham didn't work out the last time they went to Stanford.
But let me say this to you. Here's the reason I disagree with you about Shaw at Stanford, because Lincoln Riley's now in that conference. And so when you've got Lincoln Riley that's now at USC, you know, and the profile that's going to come to the Pac-12, I'm looking at Stanford, and I'm saying you benefit from that too. I know Notre Dame is independent and they got their own schedule, their national television, but if I'm sure, I stay at Stanford.
But if you're sure you stay at Stanford, you're not going to win a national title at Stanford. Not going to happen.
I don't think he's going to win one at Notre Dame.
I can't say that. They've done it before. They've done it before, and they've been there.
That's a long time ago.
But Stephen A., they've been there.
I understand that.
They've been in the Final Four twice under Brian Kelly and the BCS.
But listen, the more the conference is buffered, if you knock off opponents within your conference, then you could end up in the college football playoff just like Brian Kelly did at Notre Dame. So my mentality is you can do what you aspire to do at Notre Dame. You can pull that off at Stanford.
I don't know that you can.
Okay, real quickly, do you feel like this was the right move by LSU? Because that's a big deal. 10 years and a lot of money.
It is the right move because he can coach.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that I have is how is he going to resonate with that community and landscape of recruiting? It's a different type of recruit.
Yeah.
It's a different recruit. Man, you're dealing in the South.
Mm-hmm.
It's you can go to the South and pluck that one high academic kid from Alabama that doesn't want to go to Alabama just for football and take him to Notre Dame. But when you dealing with all of those schools down in the SEC, Stephen A., it's hard.
Let me say this to you. I don't know whether it's going to work or not with Brian Kelly. I know the man can coach. I know the man that can recruit. But let me say this. Mad respect for this move. I love it from this perspective. This is LSU.
Yeah.
We just a couple years removed from winning a national title.
Yeah, two
okay.
years ago.
We understand Nick Saban was there, and obviously Ed Orgeron, he won the national title there. Les Miles won. We get all of that. What I'm saying to you is this. You, Brian Kelly, you've been in a playoff. You got smashed by the monsters at Alabama, okay? And what you're saying is, now I got a chance to get those monsters because I'm at LSU.
True.
So because of that, what this man is saying, 60 years old, I got a 10-year, $95 million deal with incentives. I believe in my coaching ability. I believe in my recruiting ability. And I'm willing to go up against Nick Saban and Kirby Smart. I like that.
Yeah, I forgot about Kirby.
I like that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I respect the fact that Brian Kelly has made that move.
But
I got mad
with
respect
that, though,
for that.
Stephen A., is if he is much like Lincoln Riley with us. We're going to give you a few years to start heading in the right direction. And then the fire going to start. And you know LSU. Just like they did with Coach
O. That's why I said I respect
when you don't,
it.
When you can't beat Georgia and you can't beat
that's
LSU.
That's why I said I respect it.
We got to go to break, but I'd be remiss really quickly if I didn't ask you. You're really excited about Lincoln Riley, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah, great hire.
As I said, he traded in some horses and cows to go get a Trojan horse on the beach.
Okay.
That's not a bad move.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. To the NBA we go. The Lakers have not lived up to expectations of late. Obviously, they've been without their best player in LeBron James for 11 games, dealing with that ab injury. And though he has played in five of the last six, he looked a bit hobbled late in the game versus Detroit on Sunday, but is confident that he'll play tonight against Sacramento. The purple and gold are currently 11-11, seventh in the Western Conference. The Lakers had the second best odds to win the championship at the start of the season. This is certainly not what Lakers Nation expected of the big three of LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Russell Westbrook. LeBron, what level of challenge is this season?
Man, it ranks right at the top of any other challenge I've had in my career, which actually brings out the best in me, and I love that. You know, I love trying to you know, figure out, you know, how we can be better, you know, get through the mud or get through adversity and, you know, just make it sweeter at the, on the back end. So, you know, I feel like, you know, we haven't even scratched the surface on what team we can be. And we're going to continue to get better and better as we continue to learn each other more and more, continue to work into our system offensively and defensively.
J.J. Redick in the building. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you.
Stephen A., is this season LeBron's biggest challenge?
I don't view it that way. I think that he's had incredible challenges throughout his career. I would still say to you that the greatest challenge of his career was when they beat Oklahoma City for the title that year, because it was fresh off of them losing in the finals to the Dallas Mavericks and the pressure that mounted on his shoulders. I'm telling you, as a person that covers the sport, it was nothing like it. I mean, we were all sitting there looking, and it was like, oh, you better get it done now. This is it right here. Legacy, everything. Even though he had a career, obviously, that was still, you know, had more than a decade of, you know, almost a decade of wheels left on it and all of this other stuff. The fact that they had assembled and the fact that he had said not one, not two, not three, not four, five, six, seven, and then they lost to the Dallas Mavericks, Dirk Nowitzki, who they were favored to beat. And in the same breath, it was Dirk Nowitzki, but there were times in the fourth quarter where Jason Terry was guarding you. Hey, you did not abuse that man, even though I love the Jet. You did not abuse that man. This LeBron James we're talking about. The heat that was on him. I'll never forget this, Key, JJ. Following year, they down 3-2. And they got to go to Boston. Boston's got him up, got him down 3-2. Paul Pierce, KG, and the crew looking to close the deal. And we all descended on Boston. It was like, yo, this is it. This is it right here. You get bounced out from this. Ain't no coming back from this. And that brother dropped 45 and 15. That, you know, when they show that photo of him looking like he a man possessed, for crying out loud, he was just in a different zone. It's because he knew at that moment in time, in my opinion, just covering sports, there comes a moment for a lot, not all, but for a lot of athletes where winning will propel you to new heights. Losing will sink you. You just ain't coming back from it. And that's what it looked like for LeBron at that particular moment. And I've always viewed that as his toughest challenge, because to me, it was like if he didn't overcome that, I don't think he might have ever learned to become a champion.
Interesting.
See, for me, what I'm listening to him say right there is it is his toughest challenge because of everything that Stephen A. said, he got over. He won those championships.
Right.
So I'm through that now. Now I done went out there. I done asked for Anthony Davis to come. We won one. Last year we didn't even make it. We got bounced. But now I done went out and got Westbrook. I done brought the old band together into Dwight Howard. Now I'm bringing in Rondo. I got Ariza coming when he's back healthy. So I got all the old goods coming back. But I also recognize and I realize that we are not where we want to be. And it's going to be hard to get there. It's going to be challenging to get there. And everybody was doubting me based on last year coming into this season. Even though I assembled all these pieces and put things together,
that's the part
people
that's
are
hard
starting
for me.
To
There's
adopt
so many
him.
Stars on that team to say this is the most challenging, and you've got AD and
but
Russ
But you got
on your
it's
squad.
Challenging, but it's challenging because
like
you got to put
violin.
It together. You got to put it together, and it's not together yet. That's what he's talking about.
JJ, where are you?
The greatest challenge of LeBron James' career was bringing a championship to Cleveland. He had five opportunities to do that. That 07 team was completely overmatched. They were a little bit early. They didn't have the talent. All right. You look at 2014, he plays the Warriors, or 2015 rather, he plays the Warriors. Kyrie hurts himself. 16, they're down 3-1. That's the greatest challenge. LeBron has said it himself. He said it himself. It's the best championship. He thinks it's the best championship in history. That's arguable. But to him, that is his greatest challenge. And if you look at all the teams that he brought to the finals with Cleveland, other than 15 and 16, those teams were overmatched. This team right now with the Lakers has two future Hall of Famers on the team. This is not the greatest challenge of his career.
But why would he say it?
He didn't say it. Don't put words in his mouth.
But I'm just reading what he said.
He said it's right up there with the greatest challenge.
But he didn't take it that way.
That's how you didn't take it that way.
No, I didn't take it that way.
So don't mince his words through your rose-colored glasses.
No, I think what JJ is saying, as well as Stephen A., it is a challenge for him, but when you look at it, they're not playing good basketball. What are they, 500 right now?
500, yeah, 500.
They're not playing good basketball.
Seventh in the West.
When is that going to happen? That is a challenge. I don't care how great the players are that's around them. Mm-hmm. They're not playing good. Stephen A.
We talked about this off air a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we said, what is their ceiling in the regular season? And you guys felt that it was – maybe a 3 seed, maybe a 4 seed.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I said they look like they're headed for the play-in game. Now, the way the Big Three have played the last three games, there's certainly an opportunity to move up in the standings.
Right.
But this is not a team that's going to be a top 3 seed in the West.
The Lakers and the Bus family ain't spending whatever the payroll is right now to be the 7th seed or the play-in game.
That's why it's a challenge. Let me break this down. First of all, I would warn you to be careful about what you say about J.J. Redick, because he got this podcast blowing up, and then he leaves and go talks about us. You understand what I'm saying?
Is that what you do, man?
We have to be careful. I got to show up and invade the podcast
Stephen
so
A.
I can correct him for that.
Sensitive?
You know what I'm saying? I'm going to get him later. It's not right.
What did I say on the podcast? I said you were one of, if not the most talented person on TV, period. It was very flattering.
I'm not going behind your back. I think you're one of the greatest shooters in NBA history. Ain't no but love here. But I remember I heard that interview with Mikal Bridges. We'll talk about that a little bit later. You're not getting away with that.
Okay.
But let me get back to my point. That's right. I got Rabbi to tell him. I watch everything.
He watches everything.
Here's the thing. You see, you got to be careful what you say about it, because he's going to quote you now. But here's the deal. When you talk about LeBron James and that challenge, it's just a personal preference. Mm-hmm. I'm going to always hold that suspension of Draymond Green against LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Only from not his fault, of course. I'm talking about the league giving him that stimulus package, knowing that he was a guy to get bounced out in 5 back at the Oracle.
But you got to be fair, Stephen, because Kyrie got hurt.
No. This is not the finals.
This is the game.
When they suspended Draymond, and then Bogut and Iguodala got hurt the game, Draymond was suspended, and then it goes to 7 games, all right, and then they lose. All I'm saying to you is this. Think about what I just said, and you talked about Cleveland winning the championship. Of course, he's from Akron. It's 30 minutes away, his hometown. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. They ain't won a championship in any sport over a half century. We get all that. We understand. But when you're talking about it from a basketball standpoint, JJ, let's go back to what I said. Think about this. You King James. You walking around with King James. You the heir apparent, okay? And then on top of it all, you land in Miami because you can't get the chip. And Boston takes you out, okay? And then you land in Miami and you with D-Wade and Chris Bosh, and you have a damn concert celebration. Not one, not two, not three. All of this other stuff. And then you lose. It would be one thing if I said the pressure was on them because they went and they that season, but they lost. And so to lose after all of that, and then fun and everybody, and at this point in time, no one was looking at D-Wade. No one's looking at D-Wade already had his chip.
Yeah, he got
we weren't looking at Bosh. He's your third wheel. We were looking at, yo, King James, this is the crew. Here in L.A., you got a situation where Russell Westbrook's got to fit in. You're wondering about the durability of an Anthony Davis. Plus, he's at the 5 now instead of the 4 a lot more. You're looking at these different things, and you're saying, okay, they'll figure it out. And out of nothing but deference and respect to LeBron, even though we pay attention to what's going on in the regular season, we all look at him and go like this. Is he going to make the playoffs, or is he going to be healthy? If he's going to make the playoffs and he's going to be healthy, we'll take it. Because that's how much we believe in him. Because he's so great, we ain't worried about really what's going on with him right now.
But back then, you were. All right, I want to move on to the top seeds.
You got final word here,
JJ. I just want to say it's a very valid point you're making about the burden of the first championship. Jordan had that. LeBron had that with the Heat. But to beat that Warriors team was the greatest team of all time. They were defending champs. They went 73-9.
That didn't make them the greatest team of all time, the greatest record. They didn't make them the greatest team of all time.
3-1.
He was going to go Jordan in Chicago.
You know what I'm saying?
He was going to do that.
What are you talking about?
He was going to already ego joint in Chicago.
I mean, listen, they had the greatest record.
Come on.
All right, we'll debate that one another time. Let me get to the matchup we have tonight in the NBA's Wild Wild West. Steph Curry and the Dubs in Arizona take on CP3, Devin Booker and the Suns. So after starting the season 1-3, the Suns have reeled off 16 straight wins, one game shy of the longest win streak in franchise history. Meanwhile, the Warriors, winners of seven straight, are just the 20th team in NBA BAA history to start a season 18-2 or better. JJ, will the Warriors snap the Suns' win streak?
They will. They will. All good things must come to an end. I think this win streak is coming to an end tonight. One of the things that the Warriors do particularly well is defend. How do they defend? They switch. They switch a lot of pick and rolls. Mm-hmm. The Suns' offense is based on pick and rolls, getting downhill, eight and out of short rolls, making plays, ball movement, swing, swing, knock down a three. For the Suns to have any chance tonight, CP and Devin Booker, which they're more than capable of, are going to have to go ballistic in one-on-one situations and be incredibly efficient. I just think Warriors have a better chance to win this game.
See, I like the Suns being at home, especially. They pretty much even Steven. You still got CP3 and Booker. Obviously, Curry going to light it up. But much like you saying on the switching the pick and rolls, Ayton is down low. If he can come to the party and show something, then who's going to take care of him? Draymond? I mean, at some point.
But, okay, on the other end, though.
Go ahead.
How are the Suns going to defend Steph's pick and rolls with Ayton on the floor? They're putting him in every pick and roll. Are they going to blitz? Now it's 4-on-3. They started using this thing where they blitz with Draymond, they throw back to Draymond, he comes back for a DHL. If you blitz
and go right out at Curry, he's got to give it up at some point, right?
Oh, and he does. And he's getting it back on a DHO with Draymond.
But they're stay right there. Don't move. Just stay right
there. He's on the other side.
You get your almost
We're gonna
cursed,
bring up the
but
tape.
You get
We're gonna
your
bring
butt
up the tape
on the other side.
Yes.
And when he go, you go.
I don't see. Draymond, or DeAndre, rather, is going to have trouble in pick and rolls tonight.
Okay.
Let me tell y'all something.
What you get ready to tell us?
I'll answer the question because I'm obligated to answer the question because it's been presented on First Take. But I'm really not interested in the question more so than I'm interested in the final result, which is that the Warriors go win the chip. The Warriors go win the chip. Ain't nobody beating them. I'm just telling y'all right now, okay? And I could see the Warriors, and I got the Warriors winning tonight in Phoenix. See, I could see Phoenix going to Golden State, going to the Bay Area, going to San Fran Friday and beating them because they play tonight and Friday. I could see Phoenix losing tonight and then avenging the loss Friday.
Yeah.
I could see it being something like that. I just think the streak ain't going to 17. I think that the Warriors stopped that tonight because I think the Warriors love the idea of just crashing the party, per se. Now, we can't sneeze at Phoenix. Your boy Bridges shoot 39% from 3-point range. Can't ignore that. Okay, DeAndre Ayton, playing for a new contract. Can't ignore that. He got a little attitude, little chip on his shoulder, playing like it. CP3 averaging over 10 assists a game. All right, he's doing his thing, averaging 14.5 points.
Booker has arrived.
I said that last year. Remember,
I wasn't on your show last year.
No, I wasn't talking about the show. I was talking about the finals. When I was talking about to me, he's Kobe part two. I love his game like that because I think he's clutch. I think the J is smooth. He doesn't panic. If he's on, he's on. He's off, he's off. But he's not fazed by anybody else. They're not doing that to him.
Yeah.
He does it to himself. I just think his offensive game is just smooth. His composure, I just love his style. Booker is special. But nobody is Steph Curry. Nobody. And this brother is the greatest shooter God ever created. You have to defend him from the moment he steps past half court. And I got to give a lot of love to Steve Kerr and his staff. Now, I'm a Mark Jackson guy. I've always wished that Mark Jackson was still, to finish what he started because he built the foundation there. But let's give credit where credit is due. I mean, damn it, all Steve Kerr did was take him to the championship, the NBA Finals in the first 5 years he coached them. Won three chips along the way. Should have been four as far as I'm concerned, J.J. Redick, if not for that stimulus package. But that's neither here nor there because Kyrie and Kevin Love did get hurt the first go round. But in the end, here's what it comes down to. Their movement without the basketball, their selflessness, their sharing of the basketball, and just what they do instinctually. It's just everything is there from a pure basketball perspective. Even though they all know Steph Curry is the man and they defer to him, They also do what they do.
We're out of time.
I'm just good with it.
We'll react to this game, obviously, tomorrow. We're going to have much more in the second hour. JJ will be back with us. More on this and more hoops. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Brightside breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. In an interview released yesterday, Tiger Woods told Golf Digest that his days as a full-time pro golfer are done. This morning, Woods spoke publicly for the first time since his horrific February car accident at his annual invitational tournament in the Bahamas. Take a listen.
I'm very thankful to all the surgeons and especially the nurses who are the unsung heroes through all of it, who were there, you know, by my bed and kept my spirits up, all my friends and family. There were some tough times in there. To see some of my shots fall out of the sky a lot shorter than they used to is a little eye-opening. But at least I'm able to do it again. That's something that for a while there it didn't look like I was going to. But I'm able to participate in the sport of golf. Now, to what level, I do not know that. I got that last major, you know, and I ticked off two more events along the way. So. I don't foresee this leg ever being what it used to be. Hence, I'll never have the back what it used to be. And clock's ticking. I'm getting older. I'm not getting any younger. So all that combined means that a full schedule and a full practice schedule and the recovery that it would take to do that, no, I don't have any desire to do that.
Stephen A.? Your thoughts on Tiger?
Well, first of all, I'm incredibly happy in regards to two situations. I'm very, very happy that he's alive and well and able to have his press conference. Thank God that happened and he's still with us, because that was a nasty car accident. Keyshawn knows better than me the area in which that crash took place, and he could not have been here.
Yeah.
So we're very, very fortunate to still have him with us. Number one. I'm thankful for that. Number two, I'm thankful for his attitude, because I do believe it's pretty much over for him. It would have been nice to see him catch Jack Nicklaus. That would have been nice. All-time 18 majors. Tiger got one last one, number 15. And, you know, we know what he went through all of those years in between his 14th and 15th major. And to be at a place right now where he's resigned to the fact that he's no longer what he used to be and he's never going to be that way again, it elevates his appreciation for life, what he's ultimately accomplished, how he's going to be able to receive his flowers while he's still here, per se, and smell the roses. But more importantly, it allows us to do the same. Instead of wondering about why he's coming up short or anything like that, we get to just look at him for the all-time great that he was. And even if he plays again, he's never going to be what he once was. But in our eyes, you know, listen, I saw footage of Jack Nicklaus and whatever. And as far as I'm concerned, Tiger Woods is the greatest I've ever seen. And that's what I'm going to always remember him as, and I'm happy that he's happy.
See, what I take from that, though, right there, is he won't be able to play on a consistent basis, like he said. But I can't count him out just quite yet. Yeah. You know how that is. All of a sudden, he picks and chooses the tournaments that he plays in, and then he gets that one. And now he catches him at 18, 2-3 years from now. His leg will never be the same, as he said. He recognizes that. He sees that. But the good thing about everything in this situation that occurred with him, I think it really woke him up just in general about the perspective of life.
Yeah.
Being able to be around his kids, mm-hmm. enjoy that more so than being focused, laser focused in on only golf. Because think about it, man. From the time that he was born to where he is today, all he did was golf. He didn't do nothing else. So now he gets an opportunity to share some of those things with his family and his kids even more now.
No, and he was so grateful also to all the nurses, to all the doctors, just very humbled. And like you said, Stephen A., sports is kind of a microcosm of life. So seeing how he's embracing and facing that adversity. And also, I just want to mention his golf tournament. He's also paying it forward, raised millions of dollars for underprivileged children and their educational pursuit. So he's also continuing to pay it forward. So it was good to hear from him. We'll keep it moving, guys.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.